Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Welcome back. We're so happy you're here with us. And I'm about to turn this over for the second week in a row to my friend, Linda P. Jones. But before we do that, if you've ever wondered if there were a way for you to make money off of all the people talking about stocks and different investments online, well, guess what? Your wait's over, because the Buzz Index uses that same artificial intelligence techniques that many of the most sophisticated hedge funds use. And they put that technology at your fingertips, and you can make their edge your edge. It trades under ticker symbol BUZ. Check it out. We'll explain a little bit more later on in the show. But for now, head to moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ for a link to the Buzz Index and more information. That's moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ. And now to Linda.
Today, we wanted to talk about financial apps and the gamification of money and finance and trying to make things simple for people. Just this week, JP Morgan came out with a free trading app. And there's lots of other financial apps. I'm so excited to have my friend Joe Salcihi with us. What do you think about this trend toward, you know, no fee, low fee, and all the apps on your phone that have to do with financial matters?
I think the apps themselves are exciting. I think this whole idea of fintech companies, whether they're in Silicon Valley or Kansas City or wherever they might be, out on the leading edge, doing the innovation that banks aren't doing, has kind of, I believe, led banks to these apps kicking and screaming, going, okay, well, we're going to have to compete. And so that's exciting, because a lot of this innovation, when you see the app, you go, well, duh, this should have been something a long time ago, like some of the awesome budgeting apps out there, the ones that'll find out your subscriptions, or ones, and we could talk about this more, that kind of turn finance into a game. I think these are neat. Now, on the other side, though, what you're talking about with the JP Morgan news, there's also that news at Fidelity, right, with zero fee index funds now. And then you've got Robinhood, where you can trade stocks and not pay any fee at all. I think in some ways it's good, because it brings people to the table that haven't yet been to the table, because hey, if there's no fee to trade, and I've always heard that fees are bad, or if I can only trade three or four shares at a time to get my feet wet, or maybe that's all I want to trade, it allows people that might have been shut out of the market to actually try it out. The bad news is, and Linda, with your experience in the market, you know this too, the best thing most of the time is nothing. And when there's no barrier, there's no fee to think about to get out of a position, you might sell it too soon. And I remember a recent Charles Schwab study that showed people will sell an investment and they'll go buy another one. And the one they buy performs far worse than the one that they sold. Like if they just held on to the thing they had before, they would have been better off. So in that way, I don't like the low fee. Sometimes I think the fees make us think twice before we pull the trigger.
Yeah. And the other thing is, maybe I'm just really skeptical. Maybe I'm jaded. I don't know. But I don't think that it's going to be totally free. I don't think that, you know, there's not going to be money made somewhere on this, right? Is it slippage in when they buy the shares?
No, Linda, they lose money on every deal and they make it up on volume.
Yeah, right. So I'm very skeptical about this whole thing. And I know there's money being made somewhere. I'm just not sure what exactly this new business model looks like. But I know that oftentimes companies talk about no fee or no load, and there certainly are expenses and costs and other things that come into play. What do you think?
Well, sometimes it truly is no cost. I was lucky to talk to the Fidelity people just after they unloaded the news that they were going to have two completely fee-free funds. And I asked them point blank, I said, how do you make money? And the vice president who was talking to me said, we don't make money on this. But this is the gotcha here, Linda. You can only buy it at fidelity.com. You can't buy it like you can buy a Fidelity fund on many different platforms. You can't buy these. Got to go to fidelity.com. And guess what you might do when you're there? You might pick up the Fidelity Rewards credit card. You might buy other funds that are Fidelity funds that do charge fees. You might get Fidelity insurance. You might get Fidelity. So Fidelity 529 plan, Fidelity has all these other services and they're using it. And they were very transparent about this. They're using it as a loss leader to get you in the front door into their ecosystem so they can sell you a bunch of other stuff.
Okay, can I just tell you that that did not work for Macy's? Macy's online was doing the same thing. They would have lower prices on Macy's.com. They would have much lower prices than in the store. And so they were driving everyone to the website. People went to the website and bought and got good deals. And guess what? Now they're closing a lot of Macy's stores.
Didn't go to the store. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that, and we all know working with people in the financial industry is a really good thing to do. I think Fidelity's strength is that they have offices of people. And maybe I shouldn't be mentioning them by name, but I just think that, you know, when you're face to face with someone, they can ask you questions, they can gather more assets, they can bring in assets from other companies that you might not have brought over. They can uncover mistakes that you're making. They can do a lot of things to gather more assets than you just going online to something. So I think driving people to a free service might not be the best business model for financial institutions, but maybe that's just my opinion. Maybe they have a study that tells them something different.
No, I think there's something to that. But I also think, you know, my gut says there's a big difference between financial services companies and retail companies. The race away from the mall has been happening for a long time. And this was Macy's accidentally giving people the final kick in the pants to say, listen, you don't need to come into the store. Where you look at, by the way, Nordstrom doing something completely the opposite, right? Nordstrom is creating these. I saw literally this morning, I saw this story talking about how Nordstrom has these strategic brands where you can now go into a Nordstrom store and see these brands that you're shopping for online. So, hey, you can just go buy it online, but you can see these other stuff. And I think if Fidelity does this right, and if some of these brands, if JP Morgan does this right, if Robinhood is even doing this right, they're starting off with a little business and using this as a way to get you in the ecosystem even more. But I think you're totally right. I believe that these last two pieces of news, the JP Morgan news and the Fidelity news, kind of set some shockwaves through the financial industry. And even though I read a piece about Vanguard saying, hey, we're not changing a thing, you got to imagine, Linda, in the Vanguard offices, more shots being fired across their bow than ever. I think I'm still going, okay, what's our next move, guys?
Yeah, I mean, I'm old enough to remember back when the internet started, one of the first things to go were travel agencies. And people, instead of calling their agent, were going online and booking their travel themselves. And that
I still miss those days, though.
Yeah, I fought that for a long time because I loved my travel agent and she could, you know, I could be doing three other things. I'd be driving in the car, working on something, and then she's doing my travel stuff. And so it was a great time saver to have her. But also, when I did get used to booking my own travel, it was a convenience. But that was because I had my calendar right there and I could do everything. But the thing is, you know, this artificial intelligence is the big thing about the future. And it's all about robotics and having them think smarter and do things for us. And I think there's a certain need for that. But I also think there's got to come a point where people are going to crave wanting to deal with a human again. And actually, in my Wealth Heiress book, I talked about the new model for banking, which I thought would make sense if people came into a bank and were assigned a loan officer, a car loan person, a savings account person, an investment person, and they had their own team. And they were assigned that, just the average everyday person. Today, that happens at a very high level with the wealthy people. But I think just the everyday person knowing who they could call and ask a question of or who they could have help them, there's got to be some market for that in the future. What do you think?
I think people crave community. It's funny, as much as platforms like Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn in a different arena, you can even see with Instagram, right? As people move toward Instagram and to some degree away from Twitter and Facebook, people are craving pictures over diatribes. And I think it's because we want this community. We want this good feeling. We want this connection that is impossible to get when you're just reading what somebody says about themselves. And nothing beats that human interaction. Which is why I think that if you're creating a new community, and this is the problem that apps are having right now, Linda, to your point too, is that there's so many new fintech apps coming out and they're all pretty exciting, But the question is, how do we get somebody to use it and not use it just once, but use it to create a community? I'll give you a perfect example, Slack. I think Slack succeeds, not just because it puts all these different things together, all these different communities together. Slack, for people that don't know, it's a communication device, much like an instant messenger, except you can have all of your team messages in one place. I think Slack doesn't work for that. I think Slack is able to create this one unified platform where we can have interesting discussions, share files, share more about our life, but be in remote places together. So I think Slack succeeds because it helps create community, where a lot of these apps might get some traction at first because they're a good idea, but because they're isolating, they ultimately fail.
I agree with you. And I like Slack as well. And your point about Instagram is perfect because influencer marketing is huge and people really don't understand, especially corporations don't understand the transition that's happening right now to influencer branding and marketing. And a great example of this is, did you hear about the guy that had a Tesla YouTube channel?
No.
He sold over $10 million worth of Teslas.
Oh my God.
And he did it because he was just marking, you know, how much money he saved. His wife kind of chided him into tracking how much money you're saving if you get a Tesla. And so he started like documenting it and creating videos and created this whole community. And then got in contact with Tesla and they gave him a link. And so he could then have them buy through his link. And the dealers kind of got a little bit mad and said, hey, you can't just give out this savings link to everybody. They have to be a friend. So then he created a way that they could opt into something and share information and he would share information and then they became friends and then they got his affiliate link. So he sold $10 million worth of Teslas and Tesla gave him a free Tesla.
Just as an aside, I get angry when brands do that because come on, you're selling more product. And if you're selling it at a profit, maybe they're not selling it at a profit, but if you're selling it at a profit, why do you get angry?
Exactly. They don't understand this is the new model.
Well, and you and I saw companies do this, right? They'd have a salesperson. Salesperson is uber successful at selling their stuff. The managers get angry that the salesperson sell it, making more money than they are. So they change the sales approach and they change the compensation structure to bring them more in line. And then everybody loses just because of, I don't know, jealousy? Why?
Yeah, exactly. The salespeople can't make more than the manager has been a problem in the past. But this whole thing with influencer marketing and Instagram and all of that, I agree with you that there's something there. And I think these big financial corporations aren't seeing that they're getting involved with some influencers. And I see it in different communities, different ethnicities, things like that, that they're really focusing on. But I think the education piece that has been so lacking in the financial industry. I mean, we've relied on the financial advisor to educate us, but they're not always able to do that. I mean, they have limited time and that's not really their job. Their job is to pick investments for you and, you know, diversify your assets and gather assets. And so this piece of education has really been missing. And that's what I'm excited about. It's something that I think is going to grow and become more important in the future. What do you think?
I do think so, as long as we find a way to make it more community-based. We make it acceptable. The hard thing for these financial firms, to your point on Instagram as an example, is how do you put money into photos? We've struggled with that ourselves at Stacking Benjamins, like our team. How do we put this into a photo stream, whatever this concept is? And I think as we see more brands start to pick the lock, I'm thinking of there's a great brand, a Black Market Exchange, does a fantastic job of putting into pictures a lot of these financial concepts that I absolutely love. And they also make it kind of fun. I think the more that we take away the stigmatism of the fact that learning about money is hard, and you and I know it isn't, you just follow the breadcrumbs to the piece that you're interested in, no matter how dorky or how silly you think it is. And then that breadcrumb leads to another breadcrumb. And next thing you know, you're knee deep in talking about standard deviation and alpha and all these other wild concepts that most people don't know. It all starts with, wow, I wonder how General Electric works or why this company's struggling now. Or man, I wonder how, you know, you talked about Tesla, like the Tesla stock and Elon Musk. Why Elon Musk tweeting about this stuff? Why is that important to the stock? Why are people talking about that in the stock? Like you start from wherever those breadcrumbs start for you. And then I think the education grows more organically. And that's why really, I mean, just to talk a little bit about our brand, Stacking Benjamins, I know quite a bit about money. I don't know everything, but I also know that I don't like to be preached to. And so we specifically created our brand to be very light and to make sure that it's based on this science of play. Like, don't tell anybody that we're actually trying to teach you something, because that'll ruin our street cred. Because we say over and over that, listen, if you learn anything, keep it to yourself. But really, mm-hmm. that's part of the overall game, Linda, right? Is mm-hmm. that if you're just having fun, like you are talking about your favorite sports team, or you are talking about whatever's going on in your community, but now that community is the finance community, and you're just embracing financial discussions as fun, like how weird is that? Then you might find some of those breadcrumb trails that will lead you to some of the more complex topics later.
Exactly. And I remember being in the financial industry, if you gave a seminar, which I did often, every word was approved by compliance and every word was very specifically chosen. And a lot of those words were jargon.
It was so
filled of jargon, right?
And just to jump on and not to interrupt, but so my role at American Express, the financial advisors division, then at Ameriprise, one of my roles was to give rubber chicken dinner speeches. And I did it, like you, about 3 days a week for 12 years. I was one of 12 people allowed to speak to the media without having it go through compliance first. 99% of our workforce had to have every stinking word approved. And it's, oh my God, were those speeches boring, Linda?
They were. And it was almost, I felt like, do they try to make it so boring and hard so that you have to hire a financial advisor?
I think they did.
That was the game, right? To make it like seem really difficult. You can't do this on your own. It was crazy to think that. And now with you and I in the podcast business, I guess, it's just really every day we're trying to make things simple, right?
Well, yeah. And with your book coming out, with a Wealthy Heiress book, I don't know if you ever had to give, because I did sometimes, which was silly, by the way, me giving this, but the women's seminars that I had to give back in the day were downright insulting to women. Like, you can understand this too, little girl. Oh my God. I had to give a women's seminar twice and I was handed this deck of stuff to say. And oh my goodness. And then after that, I said, I can't do it anymore. Like the second time I thought I could massage the message to make it palatable. And I still couldn't, because I got the feeling a bunch of middle-aged men wrote this thing for women so they can get up to speed with the few things that women need to know about finance. It was a bunch of mansplaining.
Well, it's kind of funny you say that, because I had to give seminars based on a book for women that was written by a man, which was a very popular book, which I actually loved. But afterward, a woman came up to me and she said, why didn't you write that book?
Oh.
And I was like, what? And she said, why didn't a woman write that book? It just stayed with me. And that's one of the reasons why I'm coming out with The Wealth Heiress, because it just always stuck with me. Like, yeah, why didn't I write that book? And I had to wait for the right time to think about how I wanted to write the book, what I wanted to say, and how to make it different. But anyway, it's all about making things simple. It's not necessarily easy, but it is a lot simpler than it sometimes is seeming out there.
And I think the takeaway is, don't beat yourself up when something goes over your head, when you listen to a financial podcast or you're reading a financial blog or a financial book. Just grab onto that piece that you like, you know, grab on hard to that piece that you like and let that lead you to the next piece and the next thing. And I think that's the ticket. I think too often we get down on the fact that I'll turn on CNBC and I only know every third word. Most of that stuff isn't important at all. Just start with what you're interested in and let that guide you, and you'll know it all soon enough.
And Joe, you're so great to bring humor into the financial world. And like you said, to Stacking Benjamins, do they learn something? Do they not learn something? Sometimes that's not always what you're striving for, but you are engaging people and bringing them in. And now I hear you're going on a tour to do more of that.
Yeah, what's up with that, Linda? They're letting us out of the basement.
But here's the thing. It's at Comedy Central locations? What?
It is crazy. I get to say this out loud. We are playing the improv. The idea for this was born when we started having meetups with people around the nation and people thought we were going to do the show. And so I'd show up to just maybe have dinner or drinks or something with people. And they're like, oh, are you going to perform the show? But no, it's a podcast in a basement. And they're like, oh, but your show would be, everybody kept telling us your show would be perfect to be a live show and we can all kind of laugh together. And so we put our heads together, OG and I, and said, okay, can we, who's my co-host on the show? Can we do this live? And then of course, Linda, we thought of all these jokes that we could do if we were live that we can't do on a podcast because they're visual jokes. Like,
we do
a bunch of dumb jokes already. And then, you know, we like having, of course, bringing on great people like you and having as many different voices as possible. And we thought if we go to these different cities, we can have local people in because, as an example, when I moved to Texarkana, I'm kind of a natural connector. I started connecting people in Texarkana when I lived here for 6 months. In fact, it was funny. A friend of mine says, my God, Joe, I've lived here my entire life. You lived here 6 months. You know everybody. And I'm like, no, I don't know everybody. I just know that this person can help you with this thing. And this person knows this person. And so I thought if we can bring that ability to these places where you might live or be a part of that community, how great would it be to know that there's a bunch of cool financial stuff going on in your town? So September 25th, we're going to bring it to Orlando. And that's the day before a big financial conference called FinCon. So there'll be a lot of FinConners there. We have an opening act in every city. We're going to have Chris Browning's Popcorn Finance, which is a 15-minute show that's going to go before ours. And are you familiar with Popcorn Finance, Linda?
No, I'm not.
Chris's idea for a show was, I want to have a show that is over by the time you're done popping the popcorn.
Love that.
And it's fantastic. So, and Chris has that voice where if I had his voice, I'd burn mine. I'd just throw my voice away. I hear Chris do his podcast and I think, oh my goodness, I want some of that. But Chris is going to be there. Michelle Schroeder Gardner is our main guest. Chris Costello from Bloom is going to be with us all three shows. He's hilarious. And by the way, speaking of fintech, Bloom's a big fintech company. TIAA in all three cities is going to have, they're a nonprofit money management company. Really cool. They were created by Andrew Carnegie, who just wanted to make sure teachers weren't going to be destitute 100 years ago. Now they're 100 years old, and they're going to have somebody from a nonprofit in each one of these cities talking about some of the cool difference makers in each of the cities. They're not going to talk about them. We're not going to talk about TIA. We're going to talk about these cool people doing big stuff in Orlando on the 25th. And then on October 9th, we're going to be in Kansas City. Cool thing happening in Kansas City, Linda, and I'm going on and on, so feel free to stop me because—
No, this is great.
Well, as you can tell, I get really excited about this. We talked about fintech and gamifying stuff. They're having a fintech festival when we're doing our stuff there on the 9th. We're doing our show, and this company that is a fintech accelerator, NBKC Bank, is going to bring five of these fintech ideas, and if you come to the show, you'll be able to see where these guys are at, these men and women who are just brilliant on bringing fintech into your phone, and you'll get to see these apps before they even reach the market. So that'll be cool. Plus,
that's almost like a little Shark Tank.
I know. Isn't that neat? Like you get the preview on this stuff. Oh, but that's not all. But wait, there's more. Are you sitting down?
I am.
In each city, we have a band. We have a bunch of FinConners in our band, a bunch of financial bloggers and podcasters. Miranda Marquit, who you and I are co-hosts with, is going to be our tambourine player in Orlando, along with Harlan Landis, who runs the Plutus Awards, and Andrew Wang, who is from Inspired Money Podcast, a good podcast. And then in Kansas City, though, Tracy Phobes is the Penny Pinchin' Mama, and she is this big money-saving site, and she's going to be on the show. But her 11-year-old son, Linda, is a guitar savant, and he's going to be our Tonight Show band in Kansas City.
That's so cool.
11-year-old kid. Then when we go to Detroit, my favorite storyteller, Shannon Kason, one of his best stories is this story where he managed a bank inside of a grocery store, you know, those little bank branches. And nobody knew this, but he had a gambling addiction. And he tells this wonderful story about this pallet of money that he was supposed to be loading into the ATM. And he decided if he borrowed the money for a couple hours and took it down to Motor City Casino, he could turn it into more.
No.
Yes.
Oh, and we all know how that turned out.
You can Google that story and hear the rest of that. I won't spoil it because you'll see how great Shannon is at telling that story. But he's going to tell a different story made specifically for our show there. And we're going to have the Debrief podcast, which is about arts and entertainment in Detroit, opening for us there. We'll have Kat Alford from katalford.com. She's a great family finance blogger. And Andy Hill from the Marriage, Kids, and Money podcast will be there. And I'm super excited. So we'll be in Detroit at Go Comedy Improv Theater on October 24th and Kansas City's October 9th at the Improv. I can't believe, Linda, we're playing the Improv in Orlando and Kansas City.
That's so cool. And you made it, kid. That's awesome.
You get $10. Awesome. You get 2 podcasts for the price of 1. You also get to get in this money geek culture that you and I, Linda, have been talking about. And just have some fun. We're going to be playful about money for about 90 minutes.
That is awesome. So for those of us who aren't there in person, we can find this on Stacking Benjamins later?
You can.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Perfect. We will look for it.
You will miss the visual humor, but we are going to have it in the feed later.
I love that. Well, Joe, thank you so much. This was awesome to have you. And good luck to you in this amazing tour you're doing.
Well, thanks. Thanks for helping me promote it. And let's go stack some Benjamins. In just a second, we're going to bring in our good friends, Doug and Miranda, to this discussion. But first, if you've ever wondered if there were a way for you to capitalize on all that online chatter, the millions of investors on social media, well, guess what? The Buzz Index that I mentioned earlier in the show, you can use that to make some of the world's most sophisticated hedge funds' edge, your edge as well. It's called the Buzz Index because it monitors the buzz online. Here's the way it works. They don't use surveys. They don't guess. Instead, they target the most mentioned large cap U.S. stocks across the social media landscape. And as the conversations get more active, they know there's more reliability in that buzz. So each of the most mentioned stocks is given an insight score based on Buzz's proprietary analytics. And the 75 stocks that Buzz sees has the most bullish score, those each month get included in the index. Every month, the Buzz is tracked to capture the latest big data-driven insights, always selecting those 75 companies with the most bullish score. So check it out. Invest in the wisdom of the crowd. Head to moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ to sign up for the Buzz newsletter. You can see exactly how they run the Buzz Index over there. Or for more information about the Buzz Index, that's moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ. I invest in the Buzz Index. Doesn't make it right for everybody, but had to have that disclaimer. And let's do the second half of the show. Linda, thanks for talking to me in the first half, but I suppose we'll let these other two crazy cats into the discussion.
I think we will, but that we had a lot of fun talking about technology and apps and all that stuff. And we're going to continue that conversation with our good friends, Miranda and Doug. So let's say hi to Miranda.
Hey, I'm super excited because I need to learn about technology and fintech. I use myself the personal finance software, and I have a robo-advisor, and that's it. So it was great to listen to the first half of this interview and kind of see what's out there.
Good. Well, we're going to explore that a little bit more. And Doug, how are you today?
I'm doing well. But Miranda, I just want to ask you, you have a robo-advisor. Is that anything like the adding machine that I use to calculate my portfolio?
No, this is slightly more advanced than your adding machine.
Nah, I'm just kidding. I'm a techno geek. I've been a smartphone owner for like 50 years before they even had phones.
My gosh, that sounds like fake news to me.
Well, you can count on that from the Money Tree Investment Podcast.
Doug's about to tell us how he carried his smartphone when he had no shoes walking uphill to school.
Both ways.
Back in the day. All right, Doug, well, let's start with you. Tell us about all this technology that you're so savvy with. Let's hear it. What kind of financial technology do you like to use?
My favorite technology, maybe it's because I'm a financial planner, is I really like financial planning software that does a good job as opposed to financial planning software that does a crummy job. And I think one of the biggest differences is the reality of it. It used to be that people would do financial plans that were very much like a back of the napkin sort of calculation. It would be something like, how much money do you have? How much money do you think you need in the future? And what's the growth rate of your portfolio? And maybe they'll include inflation. So you would do some calculation for someone. And if he didn't have enough money, according to your calculation, like, you know, he'd run out of money before he died, you'd say, well, I could always increase the return on your portfolio. Let me try 17% and see if it works out better now. That kind of software, people use it all the time. And clients would be like, well, okay, I guess, you know, if it doesn't work for 6%, let me try 8% or 9% returns or 12% or 15%. And it was so unrealistic that I think that people really were done a disservice when financial planners would just do such a simplistic portfolio and people assumed that they would make X. And, you know, the perfect example of that is, you know, imagine all these people who conservatively believe they would make 6% a year or 7% a year when they retired. They counted on that. And then they turned the keys into their boss in 2007, only to discover that a year later, their portfolio lost half its value. And the planning tools that people used, if they used really simplistic ones, didn't account for that and really left people high and dry.
Yeah, I love that software as well. And I remember when I was a financial planner, just the just going over with clients the probability that things, you know, would go their way or that they wouldn't go their way. I think that's a effective way to look at life is what, you know, what's the chance that this strategy we put together is going to be successful. And then when I'd show them the simple changes that I wanted them to make, when you'd show them increasing that probability of things going their way, people were much more likely to respond favorably and take the advice that I'd given, or to see the impact of the advice that I'd given.
And I think also when you would do that is you'd be able to illustrate the risk, because it's not just about making more money, because that usually comes with taking on more risk.
Yeah.
If I can just add on to this one more thing, which is specifically, I think, Joe, the tool that you're talking about is when people would use what's called a Monte Carlo simulation, which instead of just having a very straight line type of analysis where you assume you make X percent, Monte Carlo engines, these engines inside the computer programs, literally will test hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of possible returns over your lifetime and then say, of all of the tests that we made, you know, we did 10,000 tests and 70% of the time you were successful, 30% of the time you failed. That's actually very useful information, because now you can make a decision if you're willing to take on those odds. And, you know, some people are, and depending how old you are and all sorts of things, you may like those odds or not. And if the software shows you that you have a 20% chance of success, that's a real eye-opener, makes you make changes either in your income, spending, or asset allocation.
Yeah, I think the one weakness with that is it's always looking in the rearview mirror, though, right? Is it always using past history?
Well, we have a premium financial planning service where we actually look in the future for our clients. No, I'm just kidding. That's a great point. Great point.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but you look at, Linda, the amount of time in the past that there's been, and certainly the past isn't always going to repeat itself the same way. But I think that there's enough data out there that you put in all of these different scenarios on how stocks respond to different situations and how portfolios respond to different situations economically. I think that the chance that their probability is going to be some good data for you, I think, is still a good thing.
Oh, I do too. I don't mean to say that it's not. I'm just saying that, you know, it's using past history in order to predict the future. And we just have to realize that that's what it's doing. But I think it's a valuable tool and something that's very helpful and definitely something that has provided a great service for people to be able to look at. All right, Miranda, tell us about your robo-advisor. We want to hear all about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's Betterment. I mean, let's be real here. We've talked about this in the past, and all they're doing is, you know, the good old modern portfolio theory asset allocation situation with index ETFs. But, you know, it's great. It's been great for me to have the good returns. It's been helpful for me in a lot of other ways just to set it and forget it for my retirement savings. The thing I like about robo-advisors and kind of the new way we get into it, and it's not just Betterment, but like Wealthfront or Future Advisor or even something like Acorns, which is probably more expensive than anybody should be paying, or something like Wise Banyan, is that the nice thing about these types of apps and technologies is that they have a very low barrier to entry, so anybody can get started. And a lot of people feel like, oh my gosh, I can't invest unless I have $10,000, unless I have $20,000, unless I have this big chunk of capital, and that really holds them back. And then they also think, oh my gosh, I can't invest if I don't know how to pick stocks. And so the thing I like about robo-advisors is not so much that they're the most amazing thing ever and you're going to beat the stock market, because you probably won't, is that they help people get their feet wet and kind of encourage people to feel like they can do this. You know, they make it easy so that you can do it with your pocket change. You can do it if you only have $100 a month and you don't have to pick stocks. You can kind of get an idea for how it works. And I like them because it gives you a way to get started investing quickly and easily while you learn more. And then later on, as your portfolio grows or as you become more confident or as you learn more, if you want to get into the value investing and start looking at stocks, if you want to try new things, you can, but you're not being hindered by the idea that, oh, I can't get started till I know all this stuff, or I can't get started till I have this huge chunk of capital. Robo-advisors give people the confidence to get started with something and move forward as they're learning about other things that might actually be more profitable for them in the long run. So that's what I like about it. Technology has provided a way for us to kind of democratize investing a little bit and make it more accessible to more people.
When you say it's accessible, what about for, you know, a lot of people, they get involved in the stock market, they get shaken up because the market takes a hit, and then, you know, they sell out because they just can't stand the heat, so they get out of the oven. How do robo-advisors deal with that to kind of train people and teach them and guide them so that they don't just mess themselves up?
Yeah. And that's, I mean, one of the things I do like about a lot of these robo-advisors is they have that strong educational component that does talk about, hey, yeah, it's going to drop. And actually, I've received things from Betterment in the past on days when like the stock market is kind of volatile, where they'll send like a little email out to everybody and just be like, hey, yeah, we know it's kind of crazy out there, but you know, indexing has shown that it works. And, you know, they kind of show a trend line and show how it smooths out, even though things are volatile day to day. So I just kind of like that because a lot of them do have that kind of component where it's like, okay, things are crazy right now, but let's not lock in our losses by selling everything.
And I think they have the ability to contact a financial advisor, don't they, Miranda?
Yeah, they do now. A lot of robo-advisors recognize that people like the human element as well. And so there are some of them, you know, Wealthfront is one, Future Advisor is one, even Personal Capital has something like that where you can contact a financial advisor. And Betterment recently added one. So it's possible for you to go ahead and take a look at that and say, okay, you know, I do want to talk to somebody. I do want to, or email or live chat or whatever. I want to connect with a human being to help me with this. And so, yeah, a lot of robo-advisors are starting to recognize that people still like that human element and they still want that contact. And so they're providing that as well. And so what we've got really are really kind of like technology human hybrids. Oh my gosh, they're cyborgs. They're investing cyborgs. But yeah, there's that kind of mix of the human and the technology that kind of helps people feel a little bit better about life.
Well, and actually the reason that happened is completely because they were undercharging people. I mean, if you look at the economics of that, a lot of people like Rick Edelman as one, and obviously as a financial advisor, he's going to point to the robos and say that you can't make money based on that business model. He's been saying that from the beginning. And sure enough, what are we seeing robos start to do? Start to add humans. Plus the other frustrating piece is that the name robo-advisor couldn't be a worse name for that service. We get so many questions from people that say, should we hire a robo-advisor or a human advisor? And human advisors use robos to help them manage a piece of the portfolio because it's become so much of a commodity. It's not where a human advisor adds value. And I just think it's a tragedy that whoever came up with the name robo-advisor called it that, because it's an apple and an orange, what a human advisor, a good human advisor does, and what a robo investing platform does, which is really what it is. They're two totally different things.
I agree with that. And I don't think that AI or robo advisors have been able to master the human emotion. And that's really where I think the value of financial advisors come in is, you know, holding people's hands through the downturns that can be major, can be 30 to 50%. Whereas Doug was saying, people freak out and want to jump out and could be the worst time and the worst thing for their portfolio. So I think, you know, until we can help people emotionally through AI, I don't know that it's going to be really the full service that a regular advisor, a human advisor would.
Well, and to your point, Linda, just people might be yelling at their device right now saying, well, you know what? I don't really need my handheld. But if you have only been an investor for 8 or 9 years and you haven't been through one of the huge downturns, wait until the big downturn happens and your portfolio goes through the flipping floor, and you'll suddenly realize what emotions you have that you've never experienced before. And so you're going to feel completely differently about your portfolio when this downturn finally hits. And you probably felt the last 7 or 8 years.
You know what I always say to clients when they're getting started, when they're kind of new investors, is I always say, I know you're going to think this is weird for me to tell you, but I kind of hope that after you invest, the market starts to go down a little bit, because otherwise you're going to feel like, I'm so smart and I should have put more money in the stock market. It's better, you know, you put your $100,000 in and the next month it's $95,000. And then you start thinking, wow, you know, I really can lose money, because that adds a little bit of humility, because you're investing for the long term. You think that over time, everything's going to work out okay. But if you don't know what it feels like to lose money in the beginning, you get this distorted sense of what the market's like. The problem has been that over the past many years, people have not really experienced the loss. And I think, Joe, what you're saying is very true. And of course, every day I speak to people who are saying, Doug, you know, the market's literally hitting new highs all the time. Don't you think it's got to let off some steam? And that's where we have to have a really serious conversation about what it means to buy and hold.
And it is a part of the market to have regular 30 to 50% drops. I mean, this is not an anomaly. It is a regular pattern that happens in the markets and has happened historically and will continue to happen. So, you know, I think for us not to expect that that's going to happen is a huge investing mistake, because it will happen. It's just a matter of when, but it doesn't mean that it's never going to come back. Of course, usually it's come back to new highs and continued on stronger, but you will experience those huge drops, like 30 to 50% or sometimes more. So it's just part of investing. And I don't know how, you know, a robo-advisor is going to help people through that. I think that's really going to be a challenge when we see that occurring.
Can we talk about the math of that for 1 minute? Let's just say that what you're saying actually does happen and is true. And I know that you, Linda, are really very...
What do you mean, it's true? It's historically true.
Fine. Okay. Well, you're the person who tells us past performance is no guarantee of future returns. But let's assume that as a student of cycles, you have seen this happen. You expect it to happen again. That would mean, let's say the Dow today is, you know, 25,000, 26,000, and, you know, you're saying it may drop 50%. Why wouldn't someone say, listen, let me get out now, because if it goes up to 50,000 and loses 50%, then I'll be back where I am today. Let me just get out. I'll sit on the sidelines and wait for that big drop, because according to your model, it's eventually going to happen, and it should then drop below 26,000, which would be a good time for that person to get back in.
Well, as you know, it's impossible to time the market. And so it's time in the market, not timing the market. But yeah, just back in 2007, we had a 38% drop in the S&P 500. So, you know, that's the reality. It happens on a regular basis. You know, 1987, we had 28% in one day. You know, in the 90s, we had big corrections as well. So it's a regular pattern that we experience, and people need to expect it. But they also need to look at it as a great buying opportunity, so that if they do have extra cash on the sidelines, that they can take advantage of some of these big dips. But I think trying to anticipate when it's going to happen is very difficult. I mean, even the pros that our highly paid hedge fund managers can't predict when the drop's exactly going to happen. So, you know, until that time comes, I think we just need to stay invested. You know, they say the market climbs stairs and takes the elevator down. And that's pretty true. When it starts to go, it can go like a waterfall, and everybody can tag on and panic and sell. And especially, you know, a lot of the money in the market right now is institutional. It's really not retail money. So once you get, you know, huge hedge funds that are trying to protect their losses, and they push the sell button and everything's on a computer right now, it just makes the volatility that much larger. So I think, you know, we just have to stay put and hold the course, and that's all that we can do, and know that those things are going to happen and expect that they're going to happen and have a plan for what you're going to do when it does happen.
When you say institutional investors, aren't a lot of those mutual funds in which normal people like you and me are invested?
Some of them are mutual funds. Mm-hmm. Yeah, ETFs, but more on the pensions and 401ks, hedge funds, institutional funds, for sure. So, Joe, what is your favorite financial technology?
You know, I don't have one in particular. I just love the huge number of apps coming out. I think there's so many cool ideas coming out of not just Silicon Valley, but around the whole country. I really feel like the banks have kind of been asleep at the wheel when it comes to technology. And now they're getting better, but I think they're getting better because there's so many entrepreneurs in the fintech space that are creating so many cool tools. So everything from companies like Tomorrow, which is helping people get their wills done and make sure that they have at least a basic estate plan. I mean, how neat is that, that people are using technology just to begin that process and start thinking about that process? And even though, you know, people like Doug or I or any of the four of us might quibble with, well, should you really do your will online? Well, doing something is better than doing nothing. And companies like Lemonade, who, by the way, I should say sponsors one of my shows, Lemonade homeowners insurance and renters insurance in like 90 seconds. And I saved a ton of money using that. Or a company like Tip Yourself, where you know how you always tip the waiter at a restaurant or tip the person who carries your luggage, whatever it might be. You tip yourself when you do something good. You put some money in your own tip jar. So I go out for a 5-mile run that I really didn't want to do. And I move, you know, $5 or $10 over to my account that we use for vacations. It just so many neat little things, as small as an idea, as tip yourself, or as big as estate planning. I just love it.
That's cool. And you make a really great point. It's better to do something than to do nothing, especially in terms of having a will. Definitely a good move there. So hopefully that will reach an audience of people that maybe wouldn't have hired an attorney to create a will for them. Although if you have a certain amount of assets, that's certainly a better way to go. But for, you know, a low cost alternative, I think that at least people can use that now.
Yeah. Yeah. And so many ways too now to track your money, and not just Mint. I feel like there's been a big assault on Mint, and not that Mint needs to be assaulted. I think that there's plenty of, of great ways to use Mint, but you look at things now like Clarity Money or YNAB as budgeting money tracking tools. Money Lion is another one. Man, some of the ones that are out there for couples like Zeta Money that are specifically budgeting for people that have either a partner, a spouse, or somebody else that they're budgeting with. Some of the tools for kids like FamZoo to help them learn about how money works. So many cool budgeting tools as well.
Wow, that's interesting. I didn't know about FamZoo. Sounds cool. So Miranda, do people need all this technology to be successful financially?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think it helps a little bit, but you can be just fine with like a paper and pen and a spreadsheet as long as you're checking your account balances. I mean, so I have personal finance software. I use something called Money Dance, which looks a lot like, if you're a nerd, you remember Quicken for Mac 2005. Which everybody agrees is the best Quicken. But Money Dance is the closest thing you're going to get to that these days. Just like a basic ledger kind of a thing. I mean, it's not very high tech at all. I don't automatically connect it to my accounts, even though I could, because I like to still have that connection with my money. So I'm one of those folks who still, I get out the old bank statement each month and I balance my accounts. You know, I reconcile my bank statement to what's there, to what I've tracked myself. And so this kind of getting in there and sort of getting your hands dirty, as it were, is something I really like. And, you know, my son actually uses Mint. It's funny you mentioned that. My son uses Mint on his phone to keep track of his own finances, which is great. It helps him plan ahead. He can look and see his categories and see how much he's spending on fast food. It's super great because when he insists to me, oh, I don't spend that much on video games, we can just pull up the old Mint and see. But yeah, so I mean, I don't think you need all of this stuff, but I do think it can make it easier. And I do think it can help you keep track of things better and maybe project a little bit and plan ahead. But I do think that there is a danger there. I mean, you don't want to become disconnected from your money. You don't want to become so disconnected from your money that you don't know what's happening. And even though I'm a big fan of automated finances, just about everything I have is automatic. My rent payments, everything, like even my charitable donations are like automatic. And so everything is automatic. And even though that's a reality for me, and I like that because it makes things more convenient for me, I still take time once a month to go through, reconcile all my accounts. Once a week, I sit down and check to make sure all of the bills have properly been paid, because even with automatic stuff, there's still errors and there can still be problems. And so don't let technology be an excuse for you to disconnect from your money.
Very well said. So, Joe, do people need technology in order to be successful financially?
I don't think so. I think technology just makes it easier. It allows you to pay more attention to just the dashboard. It's kind of like as cars get smarter, we can pay attention just to the pieces of driving that matter. I think it's the same with investing. It gets rid of some of the friction in the process. So, you know, we talked earlier about doing your will online and or buying your renter's insurance in 90 seconds. You know, if I can get this stuff done that we all know needs to be done, I can certainly do it without the technology, but it just quickens the process for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think so. All right. Well, that was a great discussion. Thank you, everybody. Let's hear what is going on in your world. Let's start with Doug. What's going on in your world?
Thanks very much, Linda. Well, my new book, The Inheritance Book, just came out. It's available on Amazon. You can get it from Kindle or a softcover. It's all about dealing with an inheritance from the United States when you live outside the United States, which is what I tend to do every day. And people can learn more about it at my corporate website, profile-financial.com/books.
All right. And Miranda, what's going on in your world?
Yeah, head on over to MirandaMarquette.com, which is my site where I focus on freelance writing, for a little fun look at my journey from full-time freelancer to a two-year corporate shill to getting the freelance band back together again. See how I've made the switch back and forth. And it's my love ode to freelancing. I'm sorry, baby, I left you. Take me back.
I love that. All right. And Joe, what's going on in your world? Tell us about your tour.
Well, yeah. I mean, we talked about it a little bit earlier, and thanks for that. But if people want tickets, come see us in Orlando, Kansas City, and Detroit, stackybenjamins.com/tour. And in all three of those cities, we've got a great lineup. And on that website, it shows you all the different people, including Miranda Marquette on tambourine in Orlando, which is probably the most exciting part of the entire tour.
I know. Why would you want to listen to bona fide financial experts when you can just watch me play the tambourine?
There it is. That's all you need, Linda. That's it.
I think we need a clip of that to put on the website.
Done and done.
I think that is going to be gold.
I'm going to get somebody to do that.
Right. Miranda, tambourine, drop the mic.
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Or knock it over with my flailing tambourine skills.
Like, whoa, easy, Elvis, with that tambourine.
Right. And going on in my world is my new book, You're Already a Wealth Heiress, Now Think and Act Like One, 6 Practical Steps to Make It a Reality Now. If you haven't listened to our interview on Stacking Benjamins, go on over there and listen to Joe and I talk about the book and why I wrote it and what's going on with that and myths about money, among other things. So that was a great conversation today, guys. Let's have Miranda take us home, please.
Thank you so much for listening to us today on the Money Tree Investing Podcast. We're happy to be here with you, and we're happy that you invite us into your little mobile device every single week. If you aren't inviting us into your mobile device every single week, it's time to start. So go ahead, head over to Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and everywhere else you can find the best podcasts. We're there, and you need to subscribe. Don't forget to check us out at moneytreepodcast.com for past episodes, more information about the panelists, and access to other resources that can help you better manage your money and your investments. And remember, no one will take care of your money as well as you do. So invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.